There's no reason for USAID. When you look at the politicians that have been in there sucking the blood out of it, when you look at all of the fake deals.
The future does not belong to globalists. The future belongs to patriots.
Welcome to this IBA Global Insight podcast. The approach to international institutions, cooperation, and development from the current US administration marks a stark shift from pre-Trump governments and has significant implications for areas including soft power and global justice. In this podcast, our speakers, convened for an IBA webinar and including high-level government representatives from former administrations, discuss the approach to such elements as USAID, the International Criminal Court, and international treaties. John Bellinger is former legal advisor to the US Department of State 2005 to 2009 and was senior associate counsel to President George W. Bush. He's now the co-chair of the Global Law and Policy Group at Arnold & Porter in Washington, D.C. He gives an overview of the situation.
Donald Trump has essentially declared war on the entire international order. In addition to pulling out of the Paris Agreement again and the World Health Organization, on February 4th, he issued an executive order in which he ordered a review of U.S. participation in all international organizations and all treaties. Which of these organizations and treaties are contrary to our interests and whether they can be reformed? And he asked the Secretary of State to recommend whether the U.S. should withdraw from some of these organizations. So this reflects a real suspicion of international law, a sense that prior administrations have joined organizations and signed up to treaties that are contrary to U.S. interests. So we should watch that spot. I'm cautiously hopeful that this review is, as we sometimes say in the U.S., performative. It's performance for his base, you know, and that it will be, I hope, to quote Shakespeare, more sound and fury than it will be ultimately a result in a lot of pullouts of things. He's already put more sanctions on the ICC again, on Karim Khan, the prosecutor, and on four ICC judges. Will he go farther and limit that not just to the ICC, but even to the ICJ? Would he even pull out of the ICJ? Would he sanction ICJ judges who have voted against Israel? The attacks by his Secretary of Defense on the laws of war, on the Geneva Conventions, and a real suspicion and hostility towards military lawyers. And finally, his dismantlement of not only of USAID and U.S. foreign assistance, but U.S. foreign assistance to efforts to support the rule of law and democracy around the world. There are a lot of things to worry about already, and we'll see where Donald Trump goes next.
Beth Van Schuck, former U.S. Ambassador at Large for Global Criminal Justice, focuses in on the dismantling of the human rights and global justice architecture under the current administration, including her former department.
It's easy to say, oh, that's just bureaucracy, that's boring, but it really matters to have dedicated offices that are focused on particular issue sets. If you understand how the State Department works, you have the regional offices and bureaus that are focused very much on the bilateral relationship with a particular country and then with the larger region. And then you have a set of functional offices that have real expertise, some individuals who've worked at the State Department for more than a decade, on particular topic areas, human rights, human trafficking, global women's issues, and in my little office, global criminal justice. And what we're seeing is many of those functional offices are either being closed altogether, are being downgraded, or their portfolios are being transitioned to other offices that don't have a great fit. So just some examples. We've already heard how USAID has been essentially shuttered as an independent agency. Now, in and of itself, having a separate development agency and a separate foreign policy agency is not necessarily the best way to organize a government. And in fact, there was a lot of friction sometimes within our executive branch when USAID wanted to go one way and the State Department, which should have the policy lead, was going another way. And sometimes what USAID was funding was not aligned well with where US policy preferences were. So having those better aligned in a way that many other states, particularly large donor states, do, actually could make some sense. But what we've lost is enormous sums of money and wonderful expertise, individuals who have worked on foreign assistance for many years. And so many projects that were being funded by USAID have come to a halt. And organizations that were dependent upon that funding to do the work that they were doing out in communities, with vulnerable communities, with governmental actors, building justice institutions, enhancing the rule of law, anti-corruption work, advancing global justice, all of that work has come to a halt because the funding is gone. And many of these organizations are now suffering quite a bit because they invested in personnel, databases, office space. The Bureau of Human Rights, which we call DRL, Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, that will be folded into a larger funding body, which is also taking the work of USAID. What that does not reflect is the fact that DRL had a really important policy arm. They have experts on issue sets, on particular regions, country expertise, language skills, et cetera, that would help design the policy, and then the funding would go to advance that policy. So if you lose the policy arm and all DRL becomes is just, penny pushers, essentially pushing money out the door, there's no one to design those programs. There's no one to vet organizations. There's no one to do good monitoring and evaluation to ensure that money is being well spent. And so DRL is suffering under this, some of these changes. What our office did, in addition to managing our relationship with international organizations like the ICC, I would travel all over the world to visit countries that are engaged in transitional justice projects, try and understand what they're doing, look for ways for the United States to be supportive, wrangle funding either from Congress or from existing pots of money, look for good implementing partners, make recommendations about where foreign assistance money should go, surge expertise, like individuals who are members of the IBA, who we worked with in many of these situation countries, find good implementing partners who have expertise from other areas that can be applied to these new areas. The United States has a very complicated relationship with the rest of the world. Many of the world see the United States as an imperial power, but many of the world see the United States as a source of hope, a source of values, and a source of assistance as they undergo transitions towards a more perfect union in their own particular system. And so many of the offices that were a part of that side of the United States foreign policy are on their way out. And so that work will suffer immensely. I think polling really shows that the American people do want the United States to occupy more of a leadership role in the international community. They want us to be a part of these alliances. They see value in promoting democracy around the world. They see value in promoting human rights and responding to the needs of the most vulnerable, to being there for victims and survivors and looking for ways to deliver justice. That's consistent over the years in some polling that the Bar Association and others have done over the years. And I think there's also a number of really dedicated human beings that either have worked in government or are still in government that also believe in that vision of what the role of the United States could be in the international system, in promoting international law. The United States doesn't join these institutions out of any sense of charity. We join them because we see them as valuable. We see them as advancing United States interests. Foreign assistance is the same way. It is not charity. It is a form of soft power. It is a form of building a world in which individuals, communities, societies can prosper so that we can all prosper, so that trade is functional, so that we can put a stamp on a letter and it goes to where we want it to go. That's international law in action.
Mark Ellis, IBA Executive Director, explores the notion of soft power as it relates to the US.
Soft power reflects the idea that the United States enhances its global influence by promoting values. And the values such as human rights, democracy, multilateralism, the rule of law. And I think this has been critical for us, for the country, even since the end of World War II and kind of what was thought to be kind of the American century followed that. Right now, I think the United States has reached this critical inflection point in global influence and the idea of soft power. John was mentioning kind of the attack on global institution, It also attacks on alliances, the rule of law, democratic principles in general. That's no longer in the country's interests, nor in supporting free and fair elections, human rights, accountability for atrocity crimes. And this to me is extraordinary. Now European leaders, European citizens, they're openly debating whether they have no choice but to pursue a strategic independence from the United States, a move that would kind of signal the end of the transatlantic partnership as we've known it. I've always thought that the sanctions against the ICC and Trump's first administration and the second, they're just silly to me, because it's sanctions should be used as it has been historically towards authoritarian governments, towards governments that are violating some basic human rights of its people, committing atrocity crimes. I mean, there is a space for sanctions to be used. Directing them at an international court is not one of them. But it's even, for me, it's even more concerning that you have the attack on the ICC, but the Trump administration has made it, I think, abundantly clear that it really has no interest, and it doesn't have any interest to hold Russia or others accountable for the crimes that have been committed in Ukraine. And the withdrawal of, you referred to it earlier, of USAID funding in Ukraine has had a devastating impact and effect on the ability to focus on the over 160,000 war crimes cases exist now in Ukraine. And the type of assistance that the United States had been offering and the support from Beth and her office, I think was critical. And now you also have a situation where the United States has completely withdrawn support for the Special Tribunal for the Crime of Aggression.
Alberto Mora was general counsel to the US Navy. He discusses challenges to the rule of law, both domestically and internationally.
The discussion of international law is almost secondary to and derivative of the challenge to the rule of law in the United States, because the challenge from the United States in this administration, international law, is all of a piece with the assault on the rule of law in the United States. Trump, I believe, is challenging not only our legal system, he's challenging the settled understanding of what American values consist of. He's redefining the nature of this country. The term American values reflects to what the American nation, in theory and in practice, has come to define as how to structure our democracy, what's the purpose of the country. And a large part of that is protecting human dignity. In the United States, we protect human dignity through law and the rule of law. President Trump has entered into a frontal assault on all these elements. He has little historical understanding of the United States or really of the world. For example, he doesn't really seem to understand what the rules-based international order is all about, nor does he understand the conflicts of the 20th century that gave rise to the construction of this elaborate and very successful set of institutions that we've touched on in part in this discussion. He has an open disdain for international institutions, as we've discussed on a number of occasions. He is disdainful of alliances, and he seems to be disdainful even of the concept of allies. He's attacked law firms and individual lawyers. He's attacked judges in the judiciary. He's abolished the traditional independence of the Department of Justice. He's in the process of demolishing the civil service. He has essentially annulled Congress's ability to serve as a system of our checks and balances, which is central to our separation of powers and to the whole concept of American democracy. Domestically, he's demonstrated the willingness and the intent to use the military more aggressively in law enforcement operations in this country, which would be a violation of law, an important violation of our constitutional separation of powers. Abroad, he and his Secretary of Defense have indicated that the United States has been too bound by Geneva Conventions and other international laws. All of these domestic and international factors indicate that American support for international law is at a standstill at best, and very soon you might see the United States turning more aggressively towards dismantling the international rules-based order.